When you think of an entrepreneurial spirit, you probably don't associate it necessarily with children. But this new book we're going to be talking about next, called Raising Can-Do Kids, explains that children who gain skills in entrepreneurship have a greater chance for success in the years ahead. We're talking about what those skills are and how to encourage your children to develop them with Richard Rendy, who's a developmental psychologist, researcher, educator, and consultant, and again, the co-author of Raising Can-Do Kids. I have the book right in front of me as we speak here. His co-author, Jen Prosek. And Richard, thank you for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Hey, my pleasure, Larry.
And as you listen to Richard Rendy talk, I hope you'll join in the conversation. What traits do you think help a child succeed? What have you done to encourage certain skills in the children of your life? Do you have a success story of a child who's developed an entrepreneurial skill set? Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And I thought it was interesting, like right away in the book, early in the book, you talk about what inspired you to write Raising Can-Do Kids and how you got connected with co-author Jen Prosek. So give that story.
Sure. So, you know, it was interesting because there's this huge kind of concern about making, how do we make kids successful? How do we give them a platform for success? But Jen, being an entrepreneur, was sort of reflecting on how she was parenting. She has a daughter, and she was coming up with the feeling that today, in today's world, she herself was not raising her daughter the way she was raised. And, you know, she was kind of into that stream of, you know, all of the pressures of making sure kids are, you know, engaged in a lot of structured activities. And, you know, we can go down the line. But bottom line, she was stepping back and saying, geez, I'm very entrepreneurial. How did I become entrepreneurial? She started to think about the way she grew up and the way her parents encouraged her development, not to become an entrepreneur, but just, you know, sort of how to live. And as she and I got to know each other, started talking, I was coming at it from the perspective of developmental science and thinking about all the traits that we really want to instill in kids, and why they're going to be even more important, you know, as they grow up into a future that's going to be, you know, probably pretty uncertain. And the two of us came up with this notion that, you know, we can't so much predict what the future is going to be for kids. We can't say they need to study this or that in order to be successful. They're going to have to navigate kind of an uncertain world. And that's where we kind of locked into this idea of not so much that they're going to have to be entrepreneurs, but they're going to have to be entrepreneurial in terms of facing, you know, job prospects, which who knows what they're going to look like 10, 20 years down the road. They're not going to necessarily have these, you know, stable linear careers where they're going to work at the same place for 40 years, no matter what profession they go into. So it was sort of that was sort of the kickstart of it, Larry.
It's very interesting. And you mentioned jobs, and right away in the introduction, I know you talked about sometimes the difficulty college graduates face in finding a job. Well, you know, and why is it difficult for our kids sometimes to find their desired jobs after graduation?
Well, you know, there's a couple things to think about. One is that the world, you know, sometimes can change very quickly. And that was one of the themes of our book, right? You know, technology can take over an industry and in a matter of a few years completely redefine the type of jobs that are out there. So, you know, you might prepare for X, Y, or Z, and the world might throw something totally different at you. I think that's a big concern. The second thing is that, you know, when you think about it, no matter what you specialize in college, there's not a one-to-one between what you learn, you know, throughout your education and the type of work you're going to have to do, especially if it's work that's going to morph over time. So I think, you know, education prepares you to be, you know, an educated person doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have skills you're going to need. And I think what's happening is that kids are going to have to, in essence, again, not necessarily be entrepreneurs, but some of them, in some sense, are going to have to be creative enough to create their own kind of jobs or their own mixture of work, as opposed to saying, okay, here's my degree, you know, where's the job waiting for me? I don't think the world's working like that anymore.
No, I think you're exactly right. And I know right off the bat, as you talk about how do we develop this in our youngsters, one of the things that actually our previous guest talked about a little bit too was the importance of free play. And the fact that it almost seems non-existent sometimes in today's society, but why is it so important for a child's development?
Well, you know, this is one of these interesting things as a researcher to me, because we've always known that free play is important. But, you know, we're kind of looking at it differently because so many kids are getting reductions in time. So there's kind of a new science to it. And I think what we're finding is that there's a good amount of evidence that there are some key things that you learn as a kid from being involved in free play that cross, you know, a lot of basic principles of development. So cognitively, free play is going to promote that kind of innovative, creative, problem-solving, out-of-the-box skill set. I mean, you can't get that when you have something completely structured where you're rewarded if you have a right answer and, you know, you get really dinked if you give the wrong answer. You need those kinds of activities where there isn't a right or wrong answer. When you're trying to create something, you're trying to figure out something, you're trying to test out ideas. The new science shows, and it's really cool research, how sophisticated young kids are and their capabilities. And those are the skill sets, you know, we're talking about they're going to need 10, 15, 20 years from now, but you get it through free play. I do want to say, though, that, you know, in the book we talk about how to really cultivate those skills as a parent, because we think parents are really important. And it's not just a matter of giving your kid, you know, opportunities for free play, but you can really cultivate how they approach it. Part of that is you learn, you know, sort of inner drive, and you learn a resilience. You know, you want something to happen, you try it out in free play, it doesn't work. You don't freak out. You're not getting criticized. You learn, okay, I tried that, didn't work. I'm going to try to do something else. So we try to go through the science in a bit of detail, but bottom line, Larry, is that all those things that we prize for kids, being innovative, being resilient, being self-motivated, really happens in free play. Kids are wired to do that. And when we cut out those opportunities, we're short-circuiting their ability to develop the way they should develop.
And it's really, frankly, it's a lot of fun. My daughters,
exactly.
My daughter and her best friend, you know, the other day, they're playing, and pretty soon they're running through the house and up to the second floor, and they've got a basketball in their hands, and the other one's got her phone, and they're out on the deck of our second story house, and they're trying to make a basket and shoot baskets from the detached garage that has a basketball hoop in it, and they're trying to make a video story out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's so awesome to see, right?
You know, it's certainly not something I would have thought. You know, but it's awesome to see, and it really I think of all of the structured things that both of them are involved in that take them apart, but I think they have more fun. The most fun they have, really, is when they're playing together in this sort of unstructured way. I mean, they certainly enjoy playing fast pitch softball and you know, and baseball and so forth. But I don't think they enjoy it as much as when they're just together having a good time.
I agree, and I'm glad you mentioned that for two reasons. One is that, you know, pleasure principle is really important, and I think sometimes we forget that, you know, you kind of do your best work when you're involved with something that gives you pleasure, right? I mean, you're passionate about your show. Whatever people do, they're going to do their best work when it's something that turns them on and is exciting to them.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. Talking today, having a great time talking with Richard Rendy about his new book, Raising Can-Do Kids. He'll be with us right up till 12:30 today. We'll take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back with our guests. Stay with us. Getting into a good school, finding the right job is valued in American culture today, and you probably would do just about anything to help your child get the skills they need to succeed. But research has shown that dominating parents can actually harm their children's chance for success. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A new book called Raising Can-Do Kids talks about how to encourage skills in children to better prepare them for their professional, their personal life. And we're visiting with one of the authors today, Richard Rendy, developmental psychologist. He's a researcher, educator, and consultant. And he co-authored Raising Can-Do Kids with Jen Prosek. And again, Richard, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry. Enjoy being on your show.
And I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. You may have questions or comments. What traits do you think help a child succeed? What have you done to encourage skills in your children? Love to hear from you. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page. You can post there. Or again, email us at talk@wpr.org. You talk about the importance of an entrepreneurial spirit, Richard. And why is that important? And what are the core components of that kind of a mindset?
Yeah, so, you know, in general, you know, developmentalists have always prized these kinds of skills. We haven't really thought of them necessarily as entrepreneurial. But the idea is for kids to be self-motivated, self-directed, sort of, you know, in some sense, not that they always know what they want to do. We're not saying that it's that. What we're saying is just that they're passionate, self-driven. They know how to kind of explore what they're doing and get themselves to a next step. We look at cognitive, personal, and social skills. We've talked some about the cognitive, about being innovative, about being, you know, a good problem solver, about being a critical thinker. We touched a little bit on some of the personal skills like resilience, doses of optimism, realistic optimism, serve any kid well. They have to be industrious. They have to know how to work hard, not for an external reward, but in those times when you're pursuing something that you're not going to get rewarded on immediately, the way an entrepreneur is going to just work, you know, with no return for a long time, that's fuel for kids. And social skills are so important, especially, you know, how the world's working now. Things are becoming so collaborative. You really have to have a good range of social skills. You don't have to be awesome at all these things, right? Some kids tend towards one or the other. But these are all skills every kid can have. And we think in terms of functioning in what the world's probably going to look like 10, 20 years from now. You know, sometimes people talk about 21st century skills. These are the kinds of things we're tapping into. And our only concern is that it's kind of twofold. One is that kids are maybe losing out on the opportunities to cultivate these skills. But on the bright side, there's lots of good evidence from research and practice to help parents understand fun and simple and effective ways to help their kids develop these things.
Yeah, and you certainly talk about that in your book and outline those things. Dar sent an email, and she said, life's about making choices, and when I'm raising my daughter, I make sure she started learning that concept. So from little on, I made a point of giving her choices. Would you like the red sucker or the green sucker, or you want to go outside or stay in and read? The point was to help her learn how to think and make good decisions. And she said, I made sure she started learning this concept at a very early age, and now she is a well-grounded young woman who understands the importance of making good choices and maintaining balance.
Yeah, I think that's an awesome point. And What's cool about these things is that you take something like that, and it really pulls on a lot of different dimensions. But I think a key one here is that, you know, a kid growing up like that is going to learn for themselves, you know, not just making the choice, but the consequences of choices. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not so good. And you really get to, you know, experience what that is. And you just get really good at being able to make complex decisions. And the older you get, you have more and more complex decisions to make, you know?
Absolutely. I want to give Pam and Madison a chance to join us. Pam, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I've been paying attention to all the neuroscience that says teenage brains are underdeveloped, and we are sort of taking that for granted, when I believe teenage brains are underdeveloped because we have over-functionalized childhood development. We have decided we know best how babies and children's brains develop if they just do specific tests for which we know the outcome. When can-do kids are what kids used to be before we got too controlling about how they matured, and consequently we're seeing also underdeveloped teenage brains, and we think that's a fact when it's really an outcome.
Oh, very interesting comment, Pam. Richard, what do you think?
I think it's a fascinating point of view. I mean, I think I couldn't say that there's been, you know, tests within the neuroscience field of that sort of hypothesis across cohorts. I think what people would agree on is that kids do not have the same opportunities to develop all these skills. So I'm in agreement with that. And when we say that their brains are underdeveloped, you know, in part what we're talking about is their capacity to factor in emotional information, which becomes really, you know, accentuated when you're a teen, and sort of coordinate that with those developing areas of more pragmatic, forward-looking decision-making, right? But all kids in the teen years have the capacity to keep working on that and learning that. So I think the perspective is an interesting one because, I think the point is made, the brain isn't just the brain. The brain responds, to all the environmental contexts over years. And I think I would argue as well that we've sort of not giving kids the right opportunities to make their own kinds of decisions and weigh things out. And I think there's more capacity during the teen years to learn adult decision-making in an age-appropriate way, yeah, more so than we let them do.
Yeah. Well, that the more child play and development pathways they're given and allowed, the more neural pathways they're creating from an earlier age.
I would agree with that.
Pam, thank you so much for calling. Interesting comments. Appreciate it. You may have a comment or a question as well, and I hope you'll join us. Again, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. I wanted to bring up one of the things I kind of found interesting and enjoyed reading about was the fact that visual arts, you talk about how the visual arts are important for children, and participation in the arts during childhood is critical for future success.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, there's certainly literature to support that, Larry. I think, you know, it really starts to make sense when you think about two aspects of the modern world. When you realize how visual our world has become, right, how video-driven it's become, visual representation is everywhere now. It's a primary sort of skill that you need to have. But when you think of deeper about why that is, about visual arts and what's promoting it, it's really what a lot of people call design thinking, right, which transcends art. Design schools at universities transcend disciplines. The idea is, how do you sort of go through that process of ideation and of being creative and solving a problem? If you go to the design school, the D school at Stanford, they'll have all these principles up that, you know, in some sense, you would think you would associate with visual arts, but they apply it to any discipline. And a part of that is that open-endedness of it, right? That it's not always, it's yes or no, it's this or that. You don't get squelched when you try to think out of the box. But there's a functional component to it a lot of times in the visual arts. You are trying to achieve something. So it's not just this kind of loosey-goosey, free-form, anything goes. It's very strategic and open-ended with a goal in mind. And I think it's those overarching qualities that make things like the visual arts. And there are, you can apply that model to anything, but the visual arts embody it so much. I think that's why we've seen it have an impact on kids' development.
Yeah, I think you're really right. Well, how do we go about beginning this process of raising can-do kids?
Well, I think there's a couple macro themes here. I mean, one of the things, if you sort of follow the parenting trends and all that, you know, there's a lot of talk right now about getting parents to back off and over-parenting, and parents are too involved. And, you know, I've dipped into that myself, I have to admit. But really, when you step back from it, what we're saying is not that. There's no greater blessing than having an involved parent. I think what we just need to all do, we're all reacting to, you know, our culture and all these pressures. I think first step is for parents to step back and think about, because they have great intentions with their kids, how to be involved. What's the best way to be involved? We don't want to, you know, create a manual for every second of parenting. But we do all take seriously this idea that we're here to promote our kids' development. I think learning, as researchers do, we're always surprised what we learn about kids. Learning more and more about kids' capacities when they're young and how to give them good opportunities for play, that's involvement. That's involvement, right? But it's the right type of involvement. So I think I'd like to get parents to sort of reclaim their involvement. We're not against structured activities. We just don't want that to be the only experience kids have or the predominant. I think parents are such an important agent for cognitive and personal and social growth. We want parents to be more involved in some sense, but in the right ways. I think that's number one. And I think number two, we have to be realistic about what skills kids are going to need when they go out in the world. And we've talked about this throughout the interview. But that's kind of a big jump. We have to get out of this model that it's just about being more and more advanced in school and getting into the great college, and that means doors are going to open for you. You know, the world's going to be complicated. There's going to be these kinds of skills that are essential. And parents are the best, you know, funnel for learning those things throughout, you know, life before you go out into the world. So I think if we get parents involved in the right way, you know, make them feel good about their involvement. That's a blessing, again, for kids. And hopefully bring some of the research, because as a researcher, I think we're always learning new things. I find it helpful, interesting. How can you cultivate these things? So that's what we try to do in the book. To me, those are the two big macro themes. But in the bottom line, it's something you said before when you were watching your kid play, right? You know, it's super fun to really sort of embrace who kids are and let them, in some sense, be who they're going to be. And the caller, you know, said, I gave my kid choices. And, I mean, it's fascinating to sort of cultivate and mentor their development and let them, you know, they're kind of wired to develop the way they're supposed to develop. And our job is to nurture that.
Yeah, absolutely. We had a Facebook comment from Sarah who says, I try to foster a growth mindset with my kids. Carol Dweck's research, I praise their efforts, not their intelligence. Their natural abilities are their baseline and not the ceiling.
Yeah, I mean, Carol Dweck's work has been hugely influential. We touch on it some because it's really, you know, in a good way, it's out there in the consciousness. And it's one of the key principles. You know, we talk about we want kids to be resilient, but, you know, part of that is the growth mindset idea is to reframe, you know, that there isn't failure the way we think about failure. The only failure is a lack of trying and learning from experience. And so it's not so much about resilience. It's more about this growth mindset idea that you learn effort. You learn, what do I got to do next? And you learn, that's kind of the magic, you know, of giving kids the fuel to really develop, because you don't know where they're going to go when they have that. When they have that freedom and they have those tools. And there's plenty of science. Carol Dweck's team has done lots of research showing how that impacts kids' lives. But that's that's a real gift to give to kids.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I teach in the faculty member in the Department of Life Sciences Communication, and one of the nice things our students do pretty well in the job market because they have these skills that communication skills that can be applied to pretty much almost any any kind of job that exists out there.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And again, we are talking about foundational skills. Every kid can develop these kinds of skills. And then they become their own person by the way they weave all of these things together. But there are some requisite kinds of skills. You do need to know how to negotiate and manage conflicts with people. You need to be able to communicate clearly enough and with intention to support your beliefs. You need to be a good listener. So I could see why your students are doing really well. Those, when you get out in the world, those skills matter a heck of a lot.
I wonder about failure, and you do address that in your book. How to, because kids are going to fail sometimes, and they're not going to. How do you reframe that for kids, or how do you? And then at the same time, you want your kids to take some chances time to time.
Absolutely. I think you have to reframe failure as experience and learning by experience. You know, but the way we talk about it now, it's like, well, let kids fail. They need to fail. Failure in and of itself doesn't teach you anything, right? I mean, it's not like we're saying, hey, go flunk a few classes. Now you've failed. Good for you. You've got a leg up on the world, right? The point is, it kind of goes to the growth mindset issue. The idea is about effort and experience and knowing how to push yourself to the next step. And if you're going to push yourself to the next step, that by definition, it's not going to be perfect. And you need to be analytical and have the emotional foundation to know that what do I need to do to get just a little bit better? That's something in the book, when we talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, that's what they always talk about. You know, we talked to John Jacobs, who's the co-founder of Life is Good company. And he said, really, there's two things that happen. Either you succeed or you learn something. He doesn't talk about failure. And again, we have to really teach kids that skill. What do you extract from it? You know, sometimes it's about managing disappointment. Sometimes it's about saying, okay, I have this goal to get to this level in some activity, but I'm not going to get there right away. What's the next thing I can do to get myself a little better, experience some small successes, and keep building towards that? And you know what? If I try something and it bombs, I've learned something. I mean, inventors, entrepreneurs have known this forever, but, you know, we have to get out of, you know, some people talk about the squelching, right, of creativity, that, you know, it's bad. You've made a mistake. You thought about something differently. Something didn't work out. That just, you know, you don't want to squelch that. You want to get kids to understand how they learn from their experiences and also how they embrace their successes in the right way and use that to fuel more. We talk, Larry, not about risk-taking, which a lot of people talk about. We talk about it as opportunity-seeking.
Yeah.
A kid's got an opportunity to try something. And we want them to be able to reach a little bit for it and not get totally devastated if it doesn't work out right away, but also to know how to extract all the lessons that you get so that you learn how to scaffold yourself and keep getting better. And kids can do this. They can really do it.
And I like, and this is, I think, an important chapter in your book, and I think parents could learn a lot from it, is that relates to your, what chapter was it? People skills chapter. I don't remember, 6, was it? How do people skills affect a child's future? Were you talking about the 3 C's, I think it was?
There's really kind of 3 dimensions you can think about. There's plenty, but, you know, we mentioned one. Conflict is inevitable. When you're interacting with people, you see with kids, with toddlers, anybody, conflict isn't inherently a bad thing, but you can learn how to manage it well, even at young ages. Start to learn how to manage it well, or you can learn how to manage it really bad. And, you know, I'm sure if somebody was going to come work for you and you had a bit of a professional disagreement about something, if they didn't know how to handle that properly, I bet they're not going to be working for you for that long. And these are developmental skills, but, you know, we see roots of it in early ages. Not that they're going to be beautifully cooperative with everybody, right?
Right.
But they have to learn how to manage conflict. We talk about conversation, which is actually, you know, part of the broader communication skills. But, you know, conversation is so important. You have to know how to talk to people. You have to know how to hold up your end of a conversation. You know, have to know how to be a good listener. It's all about learning how to communicate. That stuff kids learn very easily at home with parents. We talk about a lot of those strategies. And, you know, there is this broader essence of how to be a collaborator, right? Where if you're working together with somebody, there are kind of rules over the road of how you learn to collaborate. How do I work with somebody? How do I, you know, give them room to do their thing and know how to insert my thing? But the idea is that two of us together are going to produce something more than I would produce by myself. And you know what? Just simply working with another kid on a project doesn't teach you that. You really have to kind of get into the developmental modeling of it. And that's what we talk about. But these things are so, I see it in my profession. I see it across professions. You know, relationship, people skills, knowing how to navigate your social world. We even talk about, you know, as part of this conversation, being able to intelligently and appropriately manage your online world, right? Yeah. So much of our communication now is, you know, email, text, et cetera. It's still a form of communication, and, you know, it's part of the world. And as kids get older, they really need to learn how you manage that well, how you use it effectively.
You know, those are all good points, and I'm really, really felt that those chapters were very relevant for all of our listeners. And here we are out of time, Richard. I hope we have a chance to talk again sometime. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today, and I hope your book does well. It's certainly provocative, and I learned a lot reading it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Larry, and I enjoyed hearing from your listeners as well.
Richard Rendy is the author, co-author with Jen Prosek, of Raising Can-Do Kids, Giving Children the Tools to Thrive in a Fast-Changing World. And thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.